Welcome everyone to Greencast. This is a podcast that brings practicality to being sustainable, presented to you by the Waukesha County Green Team. Your hosts are myself, Alec Lapoitevin.
And me, Laura Laux. Today I'm sitting down with Amelia Cafaro to talk about meditation and mindfulness. This episode was recorded in late April 2020 in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we at Greencast really wanted to bring you this topic as a reminder to be kind to yourself and to take a couple minutes every day to calm your thoughts and check in with yourself. Taking care of yourself is really hard at normal times, and during an international pandemic, it can become even more so. But to be able to do our best work helping other people on the planet, we need to first prioritize our own mental health. So, a bit about Amelia before we start. Amelia Cafaro is a yoga therapist dedicated to teaching accessible yoga and meditation as integrative mind-body medicine tools to manage, prevent, and heal from disease or illness. After experiencing a rare form of breast cancer at age 27, she was inspired to create an offering rooted in self-compassion that met the unique needs of people with cancer and chronic illness, and now teaches in oncology support at Columbia St. Mary's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Amelia is a member of the Yoga Services Council, Accessible Yoga, and a board member of the CORE El Centro. In 2019, she joined the Yoga Special Interest Group for the Society for Integrative Oncology to advise on the role of yoga therapy in oncology support for adolescent young adult cancer survivors, and also currently serves as the cohort facilitator and advisor on a Harvard medical study exploring mind-body medicine interventions and resilience in young adult cancer survivors. She's passionate about building holistic, accessible healing communities and developing community partnerships that provide underserved people with equal access to integrative health services. So just a note, if you listen through to the end of this episode, Amelia walks us through a short meditation practice. So before we get there, you can pause, but make sure you're in a comfortable place to participate in that with us. So without further ado, let's welcome Amelia. Thanks for joining me, Amelia.
Thank you for having me, Laura.
So let's start with some definitions here. What is mindfulness and meditation?
Great question. Well, we'll start with meditation. And meditation is really a practice that is rooted in history. It's validated by science. The nature of our mind is to expect things. That's just how the brain works. So meditation is really the practice of continually redirecting our attention to a single point of focus in a really gentle, persistent way without being judgmental of our thoughts that arise when we practice meditation. And so by continually turning that attention back to a point of focus, back inside, that we say, the mind can become still, the nervous system can relax. So it's really that, that intentional drawing and turning inward. And I think it's important too to share that meditation is not necessarily spiritual or religious. Certainly, it's practiced in many different cultures all over the world and shares a long history with different religions and spiritual practice. But anyone can meditate. Anyone can experience the physical, emotional, and mental benefits regardless of belief. And then mindfulness is really the ability and the quality of being fully present in the moment. So in the here and the now, or what we say sometimes is like each passing moment. So you're staying present to noticing what is arising, again, without judgment. And I think if you could say it in one sentence, it would be that mindfulness is having a direct experience with the present moment. And it's through that practice of mindfulness that we learn how to deepen our inner awareness. So our ability to just to observe, to be curious, and in doing so, learning how to move through challenges as they arise. We build that resilience towards stress over time. We learn how to engage with moments more fully. And when we sit in meditation, we practice that moment-to-moment awareness. So it supports us in building the skill of mindfulness in a way that we can even apply it to our everyday life. So it's, again, from that awareness, we can better understand why we think what we think, how we respond to certain situations. And oftentimes this can lead to a much healthier perspective on life.
Are there different forms of mindfulness and meditation?
There are. So the qualities of both, there's some similar qualities of both. They're both a skill and they're both an experience. The practices are not about escaping, you know, not about becoming a different person or a new person or a better person. In meditation, you can certainly practice mindfulness. So what I mean to say is there's a focus style of meditation. A really common way that people practice this is by choosing something like a word or a phrase or an object to use as their anchor point. And mindfulness practice can be something like noticing all of the shades of green outside as you take a walk, or noticing the breath and the different sensations of the breath as you breathe and rest your focus on your breath. So certainly focus styles of meditation, non-focus styles of meditation. And the last thing I wanted to say about the practices too, when we look for similarities, I think it's important for people to remember that doing the practice doesn't always mean that you feel relaxed or calm. And I think that right now in the wellness movement and in our culture, I see a lot of messaging around things like good vibes only, which I think can do a disservice and can actually be really unhealthy. And so certainly it's not to say that relaxation isn't a result of the practices. It can be. But the practices can bring up a lot of different emotions, a lot of different thoughts, sensations. And so it's more about using these tools to learn how to embrace with whatever is arising without pushing it away. And to note the way in which we notice. And what I mean to say is that when things arise that make us feel uncomfortable or maybe we feel triggered, we can learn how to notice that inner dialogue. And so for a lot of us, that internal dialogue can be stressful. It can be judgmental. It can be comparing. Again, that's our default. That's what the brain does. But we can also learn how to notice our thoughts and our wandering mind with a lot more compassion and kindness. And, you know, they both have physiological responses in the body. One is stressful, the other is soothing. And so when we can be compassionate, certainly that can help assist our resilience towards the wandering mind. And I've been having a lot of conversation about self-compassion as the foundation of mind-body practice. So it's really looking at the how of the way that we redirect our attention. And again, in learning all this, it's like just learning a new way of being in your life that is always available to you when challenges arise, and certainly when joy arises too, right? Like it's not just for when we are learning how to be less stressful, but it can help us be more present to when really amazing things are happening, when you see something really beautiful outside. So yes, lots of different ways to practice both mindfulness and meditation. And certainly, again, they're interconnected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned a couple of the benefits of this practice of, you know, being more connected to yourself and you know, seeing and understanding emotions as they come up. What are the other benefits of practicing this?
So the research in mindfulness and meditation continues to grow, and I think we're in a really exciting time. There's certainly lots more research being done in many different capacities. But a few examples that I think are worth noting and that we see a lot in you know, articles we may read. The first is that meditation can decrease neurological connections to the part of the brain, the medial prefrontal cortex. So that me center, it really soothes, diminishes fear, stress, anxiety. And as a result of that, the practice can actually help us to build new neural pathways. So becoming more resilient, you know, strengthening parts of the brain that help us do things like make choices or help us to focus. Some of the other more recent research shows that meditation can actually change the shape of the brain. So this process of neuroplasticity, again, related to the first point I made here about the neural pathways, and what they can see on MRI scans is that the gray matter in the brain, the part of the brain that regulates our emotions, helps us to solve problems, helps us to our memory to memorize, it increases with regular practice. I also am really fascinated, and this is something that's really relevant in work I do with people who are chronically ill or going through disease. But we know that meditation can lengthen our telomeres, and our telomeres are like little caps of DNA at the ends of chromosomes. A lot of people liken them to, you know, the little caps at the end of your shoelaces, but they protect your cells from aging and deteriorating, and they naturally shorten over time, but you can protect and lengthen them through the work of meditation and mindfulness, which I think is just fascinating. Mm-hmm. And if anyone's curious to read more about that, just Google Elizabeth Blackburn. She won the Nobel Prize in Physiology for her work and discovery in that, which is amazing. Meditation and mindfulness can regulate fear, can regulate stress. It decreases the amygdala, the part of the brain responsible for fear, for stress, anxiety. And lastly, I think when we look at these practices in a way that they can be therapeutic, that they can be calming, this is really the work of Herbert Benson, who was a pioneer in mind-body medicine, a Harvard professor. And some of that early research shows that the more meaningful the point of focus in meditation, the deeper state of rest and meditation a person had. And he was really responsible for bringing to light and proving that meditation can elicit the relaxation response in the body. So that part of our nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system that helps the body move into rest and digest, can certainly be elicited through practice. And so I think that all of these things together can have really profound effects on our physical, emotional, and mental well-being. And as it relates to our health and the therapeutic application of these practices, I think right now in healthcare, we're starting to see it much more embraced and used to support people who are experiencing things like anxiety or depression. There's lots of research coming out about meditation and chronic pain, addiction, trauma. So lots of really promising and I think hopeful practical application and implementation for sure.
Wow, that's incredible. I had no idea that there was so many diverse benefits for this. So how, for those studies that were done, how much practice is needed? Like how often were they practicing and for how long to see those benefits?
Yeah, so every study is different. Every protocol is different. I know that in a study, just off the top of my head, a study that was done with a Harvard professor who looked at decreasing anxiety and depression with people who were taking medication for related symptoms, over an 8-week period, they could see, and I think they were doing the intervention 3 to 4 times a week. Again, they all differ, but I think this one was about, it was an hour of combined lifestyle intervention. So there was some yoga, there was meditation. Speaking specifically with meditation, the recommended dose is 21 minutes, though certainly the benefits can be experienced with just a few minutes, with 5 minutes. And the more that you practice and sit, then you can start to lengthen. So you can see benefit in the moment. The benefit deepens over time. The recommended dose, as they say, is 21 minutes. And does that answer? Yeah, does that answer your question? Sorry, I kind of went off in a few tangents there. Okay.
No. Yeah, that was what I was wondering. The recommended dose. That's exactly what I was wondering about.
Yeah, I took some workshops out at the Mind Body Medicine Center in Harvard a couple of years ago, and that was the exact language that they used. And I thought, that is so interesting. You know, I'm sitting in a room full of 500 physicians, and we're talking about a dose of meditation across different disease and illness. And it was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I love that idea of a prescription for meditation.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in a lot of studies, it's like the protocol is the same. And so they're looking to see at how, you know, a certain group of people and a certain number of people will respond to the same treatment, for lack of a better word, a protocol. But I think one thing that we can also learn, and this is something that both of my teachers, my main teachers, are really passionate about, was the ways in which we can apply these things to meet the individual needs of people, because it's not always true that the same meditation or the same breathwork practice will be helpful for somebody, especially if somebody is coming from an experience of trauma in their life. You never know, you know, if you're offering someone focus on water, well, maybe they've had a traumatic experience with water and they don't want to meditate on water imagery. So working one-on-one with people in that capacity and learning more about them and how you can tailor meditation and mindfulness to meet their needs, I think is definitely an area that we can look to doing and being of service more and more.
So, yeah. What kind of adaptation and tailoring can you do? Like, is it just what to focus on, or are there like physical ways to change it up? How else can you have variations on it?
That's a good question. So a lot of times when I work with people one-on-one, I'm doing a really lengthy intake and we're looking at a lot of different things. You know, what are your lifestyle habits? You know, are there any current or present disease or illness that may be adding stress? Sometimes I'll do imagery intake with people if we do guided imagery. But then once I have all that information, I come up with a plan that they can use that we do together in a session, but then that they can use outside of that session. So when it comes to things like breath work and meditation, I may have an idea about what we're going to do in that moment, but I'm watching very closely about how they're responding. You know, are they getting really fidgety? Are there other signs that are indicating to me that this just might not be a good fit? And then we can choose to adapt from there. So it's really kind of, you know, it depends on the situation. When I'm teaching in a classroom setting, for example, one of the ways that I offer making meditation unique and your own is when we do a focus style meditation, and I'll just simply use the language that choose a word or a meaning or an object that holds really deep meaning for you. And so that can be different for everybody, but they're all still prompted to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely works. I've also heard, done a couple classes of meditation, and one of them we did a walking meditation. Have you ever done that?
I have. Yeah. What did you think?
I thought it was really interesting because it gave you a little bit more to think about and to be able to move while you're trying to focus on the walking and how the ground feels. I really enjoyed it as kind of a different way to practice mindfulness.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's a great mindfulness practice. Labyrinths are really helpful for that too.
Oh, yeah. That's a great idea, labyrinths. With all of the mental benefits and the calming effects that meditation brings about, why is this important to think about now in the midst of a pandemic?
So I think this is a great question, and I think that the answer has many layers and can be looked at from a few different perspectives. So I think what I'd like to start by saying is that, you know, let's come back to the nature of the mind. The nature of the mind and the human brain is to constantly wonder and wander and expect things. And we're very good at setting expectations and attaching to outcomes of how we
want something to be, but the nature of reality is only ever here and now. So we only have so much control over the future. And I'm going to pause because there's a giant siren passing, Laura. I don't know if you want me to start over.
Yeah, I can hear that. Yeah, I mean, it's a good indication that we are recording this in the middle of a pandemic that kind of fits. Okay.
It does. So, you know, in addition to all of that, as technology has advanced and the world becomes more modern, you know, we're certainly living in a society and a culture that's constantly giving us messages about keeping up, about go, 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 and that the harder we work, the more successful we become. And I think somewhere in that chasing, we've burnt out. We've burnt out as humans. We've burnt out the planet. And our identities, our sense of self-worth have become synonymous with what we achieve. And so through all of that, you know, of course, this has increased anxiety, depression, burnout, disconnection with ourselves, disconnection with the world around us. And so now, here we are in a pandemic where perhaps one of the few things that has remained the same is the same reality that was still true pre-pandemic, which is that all we ever have is this moment. And right now we're being asked to slow down, to be patient, to adapt and redefine what our daily living looks like. And in that, you know, to witness and grieve loss in many different forms, to lean into the unknown that we're all facing in our lives and in a lot of different aspects, and in a way that's been very rapid and feels very magnified. So again, certainly as a result of this, we're feeling and seeing a rise in stress, in trauma, in anxiety, in isolation, both at an individual and collective level. So if we look at the individual level, you know, my daily life, your daily life, we can use the tools of mindfulness and meditation to support us in maintaining our physical, mental, emotional well-being, to learn how to slow down so that in practicing being still, we lower the stress, we support our immune health, our immune function, we build resilience, we strengthen that sense of self and shared compassion, and we learn how to cope with these challenges. You know, there's a lot of uncomfortable and new feelings and experiences coming up for people. So we move forward, I think, one breath, one moment at a time. And secondly, we can use the practices to create new habits, new patterns in our lives that will hopefully support us all in ways that we create healthy, sustainable boundaries for ourselves so that we can flourish and open us to possibility about what that looks like in the world around us. So out of these practices that cultivate deepened sense and state of awareness and cultivate states of non-judgment, we become more deeply connected to what's happening in the world around us and how we play a part in that. So with that said, you know, my hope is that at a broader level, at a collective level, we start to move beyond well-being and wellness just as individuals and more towards social, collective well-being. And in doing so, create a sustainable world. You know, I think that the pandemic has made us rely more closely on one another, rely on things even locally in our backyards and local businesses. And we're certainly living in this moment where, again, we're being asked to look very closely at inequality and injustice that still happen every minute in our country and in the world, whether it's somebody's life or the planet. So if we want to come out of this pandemic into this, you know, I keep hearing people say like this new world that we're going to be coming into, all of these opportunities to change things, we can't go back to the way that it was, to old patterns, to behaviors that got us here in the first place. So mindfulness, you know, our mindfulness practice, it's not a temporary state of mind that's only present when we meditate and then goes away, but it's a way of living and it's integrated into our daily living because everything is interconnected. And there are many people who work in social justice who certainly are much better versed to speak about this than I am. But, you know, the heart of what they believe is that this sense of interconnectedness is the central insight that supports compassionate action in the world. And one of the places I think that this starts, where we can look to shift this, is right within the wellness and mindfulness movement as a whole. You know, we need to be looking at ways, creating ways and opportunities that wellness is not just for a privileged few, but it's for everyone, and that everybody has the right and deserves to be well simply because they're a human being. You know, and how does that impact, how does that impact the whole of our planet, the health of our planet? So certainly those two things are connected. And second, my hope is that we start to move away from the myth that when and if people as individuals are using tools like mindfulness and meditation to support their lives, and if they're not experiencing change, or they're still in a toxic living situation, or being oppressed in the workplace, that somehow they're doing the practice wrong, or that it's just their responsibility to improve their circumstance. I mentioned to you that I had been reading an article from Ron Purser, who wrote the book called McMindfulness. And I think that what he said is very powerful and invites us to think more deeply about the ways that, you know, mindfulness and meditation are related to social justice issues. And he said that something like resilience has a lot to do with whether you can access community and environmental resources. You know, so certainly people would be less stressed and more healthy if they had access to those resources. And it's not always just about turning to an app to alleviate temporary distress. It matters that we have healthy communities. It matters that people have healthcare. It matters that the planet is flourishing. So ultimately, I think, we first have to create an equal well-being community. And out of, you know, our practice, out of contemplative practice as individuals, as a whole, we can then start to change the mindset and change the paradigm out of which our systems arise. We become aware of behavior, we become aware of choice, and we build a healthy and shared understanding to grow and reshape social and environmental justice.
Wow, that's a lot.
I think, you know, it's, we can simply say mindfulness and meditation can make us feel better. Yes, that's true. And
right,
how does that really relate to the times we're living in?
Yeah, and I definitely agree with your point there about everything being connected. That's kind of a theme of sustainability too. You can't just take, you know, one piece. You can't just take, you know, the food system and focus on that, or planting trees and focus on that. There's not one silver bullet to solve anything. Everything is connected, and making even a little piece better is going to affect a lot more things than you initially went out to change.
Exactly. I think that's a really beautiful way of saying it. And as you were saying that, I started thinking about there's a mindfulness practice that I've participated in and I've shared with students, and it's called the Raisin Meditation. And so, people are asked to hold a raisin in their mouth. And if you don't like raisins, you can, you know, use something else. But the idea is that as you start to tune into the sensory experience of it, so the taste, the sound, the texture, you then also start to think about, where did that raisin come from? What farm did this grape come from? Who was the farmer that planted, you know, the grapes? Where does that farmer live? You can start to see all of the pieces that are connected to your own experience of the mindful practice of tasting a raisin. So I think that's maybe that's a silly example, but I think it can give us a really clear understanding of that entire system of connection. There's even parts of it that highlight, you know, think about the rain that had to come and water the plants. Think about the sun that had to come and help the plants grow. So I think that's a really lovely practical way for us to see it up close and from far away.
So we've heard about the benefits of this. So how do we practice? What are some ways that we can practice this working from home now, as most of us are, or potentially moving back to the workplace? What are some ways that we can incorporate this into our lives?
Sure. So in terms of working from home and just integrating it into the daily life, you know, cultivating a daily practice certainly helps, like I said, deepen the benefit and sustain the benefit. And so when we are, or if we are new to these practices, we want to think kind of in little bite sizes. So starting small, setting aside 2 to 5 minutes a day at the same time every day is recommended for helping to shape that habit and that pattern. It's recommended to do it first thing in the morning. And the reason is that, you know, the world hasn't started yet. Things are quiet. You haven't checked your phone, hopefully. you haven't scrolled through Instagram and been connected all over the world in just the palm of your hand. So making that time, being intentional with that time. And if you're not a morning person and it's hard to wake up with the sun, then adapt it to how it fits in your life. Certainly that can be more motivating too. But it's, like I said, recommended first thing in the morning, 2 to 5 minutes a day. Choose somewhere in your home that feels welcoming to you, inviting to you. And this may mean that you're creating a space in your home. I once worked with a patient at the hospital who, when we had our weekend meditation and they get a little handout about how to create a home practice, she couldn't find any specific room in her home. And she said that her place to practice was on the landing of her stairs, where she could sit underneath the window in the skylight, rather, in her home and watch the clouds. And I thought that was so beautiful. And it really just spoke to, like, that is so practical. And here's something that works for you. And that's wonderful. So creating that environment, that space certainly is welcoming. When we're looking at, you know, all of us are home right now, and maybe it's even getting out of the house. Maybe it's going for a walk, getting away from the computer and practicing mindfulness in a way that's, notice all the sounds on your walk. Notice the different shades of green on your walk. How many different kinds of flowers did you see? How many things could you sense that sounded really close? How many things could you sense that sounded really far away? So, you know, developing awareness inside you, expanding awareness around you. Lots of different ways to implement into your life when working from home. And I think, too, as you practice more regularly, then certainly we know you can better integrate. So, for example, you're on a Zoom meeting and the call drops, or someone in the meeting is making you anxious or upsetting you. You can learn how to take a breath in the moment. Maybe it's, you know, again, removing yourself from the desk. So you become more resilient. And then in terms of integrating it into the workplace, you know, I think at a high level, making mindfulness and meditation a part of company values, company culture is a great way to support the people that you work with and that work for you. It's saying this matters, your health, your well-being matters in the work that we all do together, in the way that we do it. So I always admire companies that do that. And if it's not a part of your company culture, then certainly finding ways to prioritize it for yourself. And I know this can be hard, like especially when we're trying to get a project done, or maybe we're not practicing because we are just kind of caught in that loop of like getting something done and working through and pushing through. But if you go back, if and when we all go back to to work, or even if it's just your workplace, it's, you know, set a timer on your phone, take 5 minutes at your lunch break, or at the end of the workday, finding a way that it fits in your life, I think is much more encouraging. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great way to start. And we are definitely going to have a whole list of resources. Amelia is going to send me some stuff that she has on how to cultivate this practice and how to start. And I'm going to share that on the Facebook page when this comes out. So make sure to check that out as well.
I was just going to say one more thing about cultivating it in the workplace, which is, you know, I work in a hospital, I teach in a hospital, and what I've noticed in healthcare is that sometimes it's, you know, it's really hard depending on the job that you're in to be able to take those 5 minutes. You know, I watch a lot of healthcare professionals eat lunch at their desk. They're not able to take those 5 minutes. And I think ultimately, whether it's healthcare or not, we have to get it right within our own head and our own heart to say, this is a priority. And all these things that we have to do, they're still going to be on the to-do list. And if it's not emergent, just learning how to shut the laptop for 5 minutes, put down the phone, it gets easier over time. And certainly we can kind of backtrack and fall back into patterns that maybe we're not practicing regularly. But yeah, I say that specifically too for workplaces that don't support employees with resources like this. So for whatever that's worth.
Yeah. Just set the timer for 5 minutes and honor that. That's what I'm hearing.
And if it doesn't happen, you know, I think this is one of the most important parts, that we can all certainly have a goal and an intention to do something, and then life happens, you know. You get pulled into a meeting or your kid is crying. And so what happens when we make the time to practice, or we set that timer and it doesn't happen? Again, this is going back to that self-compassion. It's just taking even just a moment to put a hand over the heart or hand on the belly and take a breath and say something kind to yourself or send a well wish to someone. It doesn't need to be, you know, sanctioned time every day. And it can be just a simple thought or a simple breath when it's not happening the way that we want it to.
Exactly. Yeah. Be kind to yourself and don't beat yourself up if it doesn't happen every day.
Yes, exactly. Because then, you know, who wants to come back to practice when when they're feeling stressed about it, for sure.
Yeah, this isn't supposed to make you stressed. It's supposed to relax.
So when we're just starting with a meditation or a mindfulness practice, I think the most important thing is to learn how to be kind to ourselves. And this too is a practice, right? This isn't always easy. But that practice of self-compassion, which we define as intentionally being kind to ourselves in moments that are difficult. I recently did some research around why people don't meditate and why it's hard for them to come to the practice. And the number one thing that came up was that people's anxiety about doing the practice was the barrier to doing the practice. You know, they mentioned things like, I don't want to do it wrong, or when I sit to practice, my mind is really active. And what I would offer to somebody if they're experiencing that is that, well, this is why we practice, to learn how to, you know, part of the reason why we practice is to learn how to calm the fluctuations of the mind. And again, be kind to yourself, because that's going to build that resilience. So you're not alone in that. And I think a lot of times people feel that, that they are alone in that. And again, just with, I think with a lot of the messaging in wellness culture right now, especially in the yoga community, it's that it looks a certain way. And if you don't fit that way that it looks, then that's not accessible to you. But, you know, I'm very passionate about bringing the scientific benefits of these practices and sharing them in accessible ways, because it looks different for everybody. What works for some doesn't work for others. There are people going through things in life that, you know, they can experience the benefit and maybe they're not because it feels inaccessible to them. So yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And I've definitely felt that myself of, oh, I don't want to start this because I don't know if I'm doing it right, or I don't know if I can commit to the days that I should. So just knowing that it's flexible. It's flexible to you what you want, and just being kind to yourself if it doesn't turn out exactly how you imagined it, I think is the most important thing for me to hear, at least. And it sounds like that's what you had found as well.
That is what I find. And the last thing I'll say about this is that, you know, my practice changed a lot. I went through breast cancer when I was 27, and I learned very quickly that a lot of the mainstream yoga and meditation offerings, they didn't meet the needs that I was going through, whether it was physically, mentally, you know, emotionally. And so right now in yoga and meditation communities, we're seeing more teachers train and develop their skill set to be able to work with people who are going through things like trauma or cancer or PTSD or, you know, working with somebody, finding a teacher, if you'd like to work with, who understands what you're going through or understands if you have unique needs, to be met. And so again, just creating that accessibility, knowing that, that it's out there, that people are out there doing the work of making yoga and meditation accessible to people.
Wonderful. So as a way to practice this, we're going to go through a little exercise right now, just a way to understand what it's like, and Amelia's going to guide us through it. So we'll just start there. Do you want to start that now?
Sure. Okay, so I'm going to just set a timer on my phone. So if you're listening to this podcast recording and are going to share with us an experience of meditation, if you're sitting in a chair or lying down at home, the most important thing, or one of the most important things when we start the practice, is to be comfortable. So if you want to readjust your body, you can sit in a chair, you can lie down on the floor. Really, this practice is about meeting you where you're at. And so if you are sitting in a chair, you can bring the feet flat and lengthen the spine. Allow the palms to rest face down or up on the knees. And if you're lying down, again, let the legs be uncrossed and straight out in front of you, where you can imagine the spine lengthening tall. And again, the palms can rest face up or down on the belly or by your side. And if it feels safe and comfortable to you, please close the eyes. Or you can allow the eyes to rest towards the heart or the feet or the floor. And take a moment to just bring your awareness to the breath. Simply notice the breath as it is without trying to control anything or change anything. Just allow the breath to bring you into this moment in time and into this place. So today we will work a little bit with what's called a focus style meditation. So I invite you to bring into your imagination a word or an object or a phrase that holds really deep meaning for you. And if nothing comes to mind, that's okay. You can choose to rest your attention on the breath. Sometimes what's common for people is the word one or peace, whatever feels like it resonates for you. And if you've found an object, a word, or a phrase that's meaningful to you that has come to mind, just take a moment to notice and bring into your awareness any shape or color or texture or sound associated with this point of focus. And then allow your attention to rest here just for the next few minutes as we move into a meditation. If you notice that the mind wanders or has become distracted, there's no need to worry, how did I become distracted? Instead, kindly, compassionately, return your attention back to your point of focus and give full attention to that point of focus in each passing moment. Letting thoughts come, letting thoughts go. As you breathe in, notice I am breathing in. As you breathe out, notice I am breathing out. Become aware of the space beneath you, the space above you, and the space around you. Notice any sensations in the body or sounds in the room. Return your attention once more to that point of focus. Again, noticing any color or shape or texture or sound. And then allowing your attention to return back to the breath. And for a moment, just notice the quality of the breath. Is it steady and smooth? Or fast and shallow? And simply noticing whatever is present for you, inviting some curiosity to that. Knowing that at any point, if you need to, feel a moment of connection to yourself, that the breath is always there for you to anchor into the present moment. And then just take a moment to thank yourself for making these few moments to pause and honor your health and your well-being. And then as you're ready, you can begin to wiggle the fingers and wiggle the toes. If the eyes are closed, open the eyes or gently lift the gaze. Just allow yourself to return to this moment, to wherever it is that you are, or wherever it is that you are. And then here we are.
Thank you. That was a perfect little break in my day.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So last thing I'll share is for whoever's listening, and if this resonates for you, you know, I think it's important to remember that when we look at these practices through the lens of healing, which means to make whole, it's to remember that these tools and these resources are within all of us, and they're, you know, accessible to us in each passing moment. And so that opportunity for connecting to ourselves, to the world around us, it's here. It's in each of us. And I once had a teacher who said, you know, something to the extent that it's all the parts of us. It's the parts that are messy. It's the parts that are great. It's our wholeness. And we bring that to each experience. And I think it's beautiful. And it's a great reminder that we're not alone. We are all in this together. We may not be going through the same things, but we all have something in us that connects us. You know, I think a lot of times people who come to this, like, can see the person leading the meditation or the yoga as like, oh, this is the leader of the thing and they have all the answers, but that couldn't be further from the truth. It's like everyone is their own healer, and everyone can access that. So when you're doing a practice, just to remember that that person's there to facilitate the experience for you, but that you're the one doing the hard work of calming the mind and noticing your thoughts. So I would love for people to be able to remember that for themselves.
That's beautiful. That's a perfect place to end with that thought. Thank you so much, Amelia. This was really, really lovely to be able to spend a couple of minutes talking to you about this and understand more about meditation. So thank you.
Thank you for your initiative. Thank you for the invitation. And I wish you the best with this work. It's great that you're doing this. So thank you.
Make sure to check out Greencast on Facebook, where we post the most up-to-date information, release episodes, provide a lot more resources about things you heard on the show, and have conversations about episodes and sustainability in Waukesha, Wisconsin, and beyond. Also, if you're interested in the Waukesha County Green Team, please check out our website and Facebook page and come to one of our board meetings. They're always open to the public. Greencast is produced through the Waukesha County Green Team by Alec Lapointevin and Laura Laux, with help from Stacey Balsley. Our theme music is by Dan Krill and Emma Koppel. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, sustainability starts with all of us.